Innovation Crush. My name is Chris Denson. In case you're tuning in for the first time ever, I feel bad for you. You have a lot of catching up to do. However, if you have listened before, you probably know that this show covers all things innovation, marketing, ideas, and the smart people making those things happen. And today, I have Mr. Adidas himself, John Werner. You want to say hello, John?
Hey. Hey, Chris. Hey.
I normally don't do this, but I am going to read something.
Sure.
John works at the intersection of digital and sport to identify opportunities for innovation to connect with external partners to develop new technologies and to bridge the gap from emerging tech into simple, meaningful consumer benefits and experiences.
That's a lot of words.
I know. I have no idea what I just said.
Yeah.
You know, when you read and then you know, actually process what you're... Yeah. This is one of the things I do with my daughter. Like, what did you just read? Like, explain it to me, and she's just verbatim. However, I would love for you to kind of explain what that means in terms of your current day-to-day life.
Sure. So I appreciate the question. It's, to put it more simply, because they kind of give you, hey, can you fill in a 60-word bio,
right,
when I could actually do it in just a few words. I basically look at the intersection of technology and sport.
Okay.
Anything that has to do with new advances in tech, that technology could be electronic, you know, digital. It could be fabric material. Mm-hmm. It could be shoe technology, things that actually go into the midsole or the sole of the shoe, even in the outsole of the shoe. I'm always looking for new ways to make the athlete better,
right,
and to, you know, affect a culture of innovation within our company, which I think we have a really, you know, a really good culture of.
When you say athlete, do you, what, like, where's the line between, mm-hmm, I think I'm an athlete,
yeah,
and I'm actually Kobe Bryant?
Yes, so there's aspiring athletes, right? So it's that is a fine line, but our consumers like the fact that we spend as much time and energy perfecting our products for an elite athlete. So meaning, you know, how fast you can cut on the basketball court. You know, how well you can keep traction when you're on the soccer pitch. Things that really matter a lot to elite athletes translate quite well down into the consumer space,
yeah,
into aspiring athletes, those that want to be like Kobe, want to be like Messi, want to be like their favorite star. You know, if our baseline was trying to go after them specifically with our technology, we'd probably miss the mark.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, if you don't aim high,
right,
you don't start with the best, like, then it's hard to mimic it. Right?
That's exactly right.
So give us some examples. Like, you know, when I read up on you, I didn't realize that it also goes into materials and some of the other sort of, mm-hmm, areas of innovation. You know, I think about, like, more wearables, I think, naturally. I think most,
sure,
people, when you say sport and tech, I was like, oh, it's wearables. But give us some examples of stuff that's not, like, sort of sensory-based. And I do want to get into the sensory-based kind of stuff, too.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give a great example. The innovation team came up with what we call a digital soccer ball. And that digital soccer ball has suspended in the middle of the pit of the ball electronics that have accelerometer technology, Bluetooth, conductive wireless charging, basically enough sensors and tech inside the ball to know when you actually kick the ball from a standstill, what the RPM is on the ball, how fast the ball goes, what the arc, what does it look like, the trajectory of the ball, where your foot actually hit the ball, and giving a heat map of all the places you hit the ball, and then gives you instructions about where you place your other foot when you're about to kick the ball.
Right.
So it kind of walks you all through this. It pairs up with a mobile phone. It doesn't. But your friends can. I mean, it's you know, you can challenge each other, and
right,
but basically, it's trying to get them to kick like, you know, like a Messi, like their star. It'll give examples. Here, try to do this. And then you'll see your trajectory matched against the trajectory of a pro.
So seeing that, right? Okay, so like I'm out of the field, and I've seen this thing at CES. It won,
yeah,
one of the best innovation awards.
That's right,
yeah,
it did.
I studied up a little. But no, like I'm on a field. I go and kick this ball. When do I get the data and the feedback? Like, does that happen on a mobile device? Does,
yes,
that happen? Like, do I go to YouTube and put up my video next to?
No, it happens. It happens immediately. I mean, meaning when you kick the ball, and if you have the phone with you,
right,
the ball will leave your area of connected connectedness, right? Yeah. So when the ball comes back within the range to communicate with your phone, it then starts downloading all the information about that previous kick. And then it builds graphs and charts and shows you everything you're supposed to do. It tells you, you know, if you were trying to hit the ball within a certain 5 mile per hour window, it'll mark exactly where in that speed spectrum you made it. Right. And so the smaller that window is, the more you learn how to control your kick. So it's not always about wanting to kick the ball as hard as you can.
Right.
That's what a lot of kids do. They want to go out and just kick the ball as fast as they can, and they call it a day. This actually helps you learn control. And so it gets into a lot of different facets of the game.
It's about finesse, right?
It's like, totally about finesse.
Now, have you guys quantified, like, you know, hey, we can work on you on 116 different data points? Like, is there any sort of math or, like, you know, a quantifiable list of things that the thing does? Or is it just more like you've grouped it all together? And
we're kind of doing, yeah, we call it business intelligence. We kind of look at the data, all the different data points that are collected by the ball, and then we apply rules. And so from a consumer-facing point of view, they don't need to see necessarily all the raw data that's right. being collected, because there's a lot there. All they see is the actual results of what you've done. Does that mean that in the future we might not let that raw data out to third parties to allow them to hack and do and have fun yeah. with that data? Sure, I think it's a great idea to do something like that.
Right.
And we're opening up a lot of our devices to do that. We just haven't gotten to the ball yet.
Is there a next area of sport that you're going to tackle outside of soccer? I mean, soccer is huge, obviously. And these balls retail for, what, a couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, $199.
Yeah, $199. Man, I'm good.
Yeah.
But a couple hundred bucks, you can do this at home. And yeah. So is there a next arena? Is baseball the next thing? Is basketball? Or you're kind of satisfied with soccer at this point?
Well, no, we're not. I mean, it's not a matter of satisfaction. I mean, I think there's other sport we can apply what we've learned with soccer, too. Obviously, basketball makes sense because it's an inflatable ball. It's similar like a soccer ball. When you get into other types of balls, it requires different types of electronics and capabilities. I mean,
right.
a baseball's hard on the inside. It doesn't have a suspended capability. A football is inflatable. It's a different shape.
Right.
So there's different things that go on with that. And we don't necessarily go in and just add technology just for technology's sake. So we really right. have to understand, if we add these capabilities, is it going to make a quarterback better by knowing their RPM? I mean, it makes a big difference for a soccer player, because if you're trying to kick it around penalty, you know, people that are standing in front of the goal
right.
on a penalty kick, you need to be able to bend the ball. So it makes a lot of sense to know the RPM and the speed and the distance and everything so that you can effectively be a better player. Now, from a quarterback perspective, I think it was a Drew Brees study where they were showing RPMs and speed and whatnot, and it. The only thing the RPMs really did was help identify how fast, how far it would go in the air.
Right.
And if you can actually get that, you can measure that fairly quickly.
Sure.
So that's not a hard thing. But there might be some hidden things in there that we don't know about.
Yep.
And so we'll probably play around.
That's interesting you say that, you know, I've kind of been obsessing over design thinking, right?
Like, yes.
Because there's a lot of things we can do.
Sure.
But, you know, a large percentage of it is probably not even necessary, depending on, like, the two cases you just gave. So, I mean, can you kind of dive into, like, what happens before you make the ball, right? Or
yeah.
what happens before you make the thing so that you guys are designing for the best use case scenario?
Sure. Yeah, so we've got an incredible team of in the Adidas innovation team that has the luxury of not necessarily having to worry about day-to-day activities, meaning they don't have a deadline this Friday to have some project done. It's more like, hey, we've got 2 to 3 years, even sometimes longer, to ideate
right.
around different things. And we'll do offsites as a team. We'll bring in cross-matrix teams where we'll you know, tackle somebody that might be in the specific business unit that we're interested in innovating around, so
right.
it might be the basketball BU or soccer BU or tennis, whatnot, pull them in to get their insights, and we kind of build like a cross-functional team in some cases where we just kind of brainstorm and ideate. And we look, one of my jobs is to always look at the technology roadmap. When are things getting small enough to be able to do cool stuff? And
right.
so sometimes it comes out of the fact that, hey, there's this really cool stuff that was made for the medical field, but perhaps we can use it in the sports fitness field. Let's try it out. Let's
right.
see what you can do. It's kind of like a it's a creator mentality. It's a maker, you know, mentality that's kind of been ingrained in our culture, and it's people exploring our little projects all the time.
Yeah.
Not necessarily are they the ones that they've been tasked to do by their managers. They're just having fun. There might be a pro, you know, an ex-pro tennis player, an ex-Olympic swimmer. I mean, mm-hmm. these are examples that, you know, they're on the teams and they like those sports. They're right. interested in trying to figure out how to make it better, and so they'll go do their pet projects, and if they come back and there's something of value, we dig in and go.
But from a, like, you know, I actually work on an innovation team, so I kind of get it. But I think within a corporation that puts out products is about sales, and mm-hmm. there's bottom line to like virtually every other department in yep. the company. Like, where are you held accountable? You know, because you guys can play all day, right?
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
oh, let's see if this, you know, this stethoscope works on the tennis ball. But where does the company expect you to deliver something that's tangible, and like, and how does that relationship work with?
Okay, so this is pretty unique within our group. We don't have that accountability. We have the ability.
Lucky.
We have the ability to go out there, but we have a great hit rate. So the innovation team has about a 70% hit rate.
Wow.
Which
huge.
Well, the average is less than 10%.
Right.
So we have like 70% hit rate of the projects that we go and undertake. 70% make it into the market. So, which is phenomenal, right? So, hats off to our leadership
yeah.
team. It's just incredible how they are able to discern and figure out exactly the projects we're supposed to go do.
I mean, I like that. You know, there's a kind of a theory that goes in a lot of these shows that when we talk to people about gathering diverse perspectives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you say the swimming guy versus the golf guy versus
yeah.
you know all these or girl, and they come together, or somebody's got a thought, and you kind of you're cross applying, you know, thinking and, mm-hmm. and methods. Is there any, you know, anything that comes to mind that's kind of like a crazy, you know, one of the craziest mashups where you totally didn't think something would like match up with, you know, one of the problems you're trying to solve for?
Well, we've had, we have a formalized group that actually, their job is to look 2 to 3 years out. It's actually changed names from the innovation team to futures, because we kind of went through the shift internally that said, you know what, everybody that works at Adidas is an innovator. And so by just calling out a group that were, you know, the innovation team, it was kind of leaving out, you know, the rest of the employees that have great ideas.
Sure.
And so we actually have a program that allows you to put in your innovative ideas, you know, within an intranet website. You can actually post things here. What if you could do this? And then those guys get vetted and get awarded based on, you know, how well that plays out from whoever's doing the judging. And some of those are pretty crazy ideas.
Right.
They might not be tied to feasibility, you know, but that's okay. We right. don't want people to be thinking purely from putting their ideas in a box because they know that the current advances in technology can only go this far.
Right.
So to be able to tap into people within the company that have no box and can look outside that and just come up with these crazy, wacky ideas, and we might look at those and that quickly go to grid going, that can never be done.
Right.
But then sometimes we catch it and go, oh, wait a second. You know, maybe we were looking at it. It couldn't be done the way we were thinking it could be
yes.
done. So this challenges us to think about, okay, let's go try to figure this out in a different way. I mean, because we have an age-old problem with when you run in a pair of shoes, how do you know when it's time to get another pair of shoes? I mean, consumers will look at...
By the way, I've had the same Adidas running shoes for probably 7 years.
And are you still running in them?
Not really.
Okay. Right.
When I do go run, I just go back in the closet and grab those.
Yeah. So if they're just like for kicks, okay. So there's a difference between running and trying to prevent yourself from twisting your ankle and you know, injury prevention.
Right.
And having a good feel for when you run. So we, you know, you try to minimize all the impacts in the major joint areas of the body, the hip and the knees and the ankle and so
shoulders.
That's right. That's why we spend a lot of energy on this new technology called Boost. That's kind of replaced the old technology, and Boost technology actually provides an incredible energy return. However, with previous versions of technology, the outsole when you look down at your feet, at your shoes on your feet, you would see, oh, that looks, these still look clean, they still look fine, I don't see any cracks or
right.
wear. But then, and then you might even look, you might even turn the shoe over and look at the tread, and you go, oh, there's still some tread left on here. But the area between the tread and your foot, there's this thing called the midsole. And the midsole is really where all the cushioning is. Well, that cushioning can start to compress based on how heavy you are, based on the climate that you do all your activities in.
Right.
It could compress. And it gets to a point where it won't bounce back as much. And over time, it just stops bouncing back altogether. And what that'll do is that can establish other types of injuries if you're not getting that same, any kind of bounce back or any kind
right.
of absorption. So if we had the capability to tell the consumer, hey, know your shoe looks great, and matter of fact, you can retire it from running, use it as your standard pair of kicks,
right?
But it's time to get another pair. So if you're going to continue this serious running, because we notice maybe you're a very avid runner, and we just want to make sure you stay in shoes that are going to keep you from.
So where does that solution come from? Right? Is that just are you thinking about a wearable sort of sensor that goes in the shoe, or is it something that's tied to like your Runkeeper app that tells you about your mileage and your?
Yeah, well, totally. It could plug into. Those are all great examples.
Thank you. Are you guys hiring?
Yeah, sure. So, But what if it was built into the shoe itself as a wearable, but it didn't require a battery? It was something as simple as, much like you do on a tread of a tire.
Right.
You measure the tread. And there's some cool ways that we could do that. I can't go into this right now, but suffice it to say, we're looking at how to use pieces of the shoe to better tell you if the shoe can continue to be worn. I know it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And if we ever come to market with this product, you'll understand what I'm saying. But it's things like that. Also, trying to think about reuse. If we don't need to use technology to solve a problem, then let's go use this other way to do it.
Right.
And so we don't limit ourselves, even though we're in this world of digital and wearable and everything. If there's a simpler solution, we'll pick it.
It's interesting, you touched on something a minute ago, and even in this example, it's kind of like, I call it sort of the how, not know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how can we use this? Even if it's the wackiest, weirdest, maybe even dumbest idea on the whiteboard, you're like, how do we, leverage this thinking versus doing away with it altogether? But I was going to ask you also, just when you talk about like a 2 to 3 year dev cycle and looking out, given today's pace of technology growth, what happens in the two, especially as far as pivoting and mm-hmm. or a new thing comes out and you're like, oh, that's the thing that we were thinking about. How do you keep up with the speed of, I won't say culture, but the speed of technology when you have a long development cycle like that?
It's a challenge. But the type of stuff we look at, miniaturization, different alloys, different, just different materials, you kind of have, those things aren't growing in an unpredictable way. Okay, the Moore's Law just kind of keeps on dictating that things get smaller and smaller from an electronics perspective. And so we can gauge that in 2 years. The thing that we prototype today that can't fit in a shoe will fit in a shoe in 2 years, just based on the trends that we see. So we don't necessarily get stuck that way. What we get stuck with is some of the companies and vendors that we work with, they might have a part that we put in 2 years in advance, and by the time we go to market, that part is, even though it's still working great, it's been obsoleted from the vendor and they're no longer supporting it. That's more of the problems that we have, and so we kind of have to retrofit that part and add something else in there. But typically we don't run into as much of what you're suggesting. And that's not to say that it doesn't happen, but we try to find failure fast,
right?
So that we don't spend a lot of energy, going down a bad path. So,
pre Adidas, tell us about Bones in Motion. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I the name's kind of funky, but it really worked for us because
right.
You'll remember it. Your audience will remember it probably now. Not that you remembered it when I did it, but you'll remember the name now. It'll be in the back of your mind. What in the world is that? We started an early, as a fitness company that took advantage of, at the time, there were no cell phones that had GPS in them. Believe it or not, there was a time when that happened. And these were feature phones before the Apple Store, before everything existed like that.
There were phones at home that would just plug right into the wall.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. So, but we're not talking about those.
too far back. Chris.
Too far back. So we kind of had the idea. I wasn't an avid runner, but I just started looking and seeing that, hey, you know what? People are driving in their car. They go for a run, and they drive in the car with their odometer, and they kind of keep track of their distance that way. Believe it or not, this is what people did. They would actually drive the exact route they did in their car to get their distance. Bikes didn't have the problem. They had speedometers and the ability to see all this stuff. But runners were kind of at a disadvantage. So we looked at mobile phones as a way to get that GPS capability because we knew E911 was coming. Mm-hmm. So you had to have location for 911 calls. And we were hopeful that we would get accuracy out of that. The thing is, we started very early and established applications that were, at the time, you had to build an application specifically for each feature phone. Meaning, it wasn't like I have one app that runs on all the different iPhones out there. It was every single model of every brand that we supported had to have a special version of the the app. Wow. And so I think when we last counted, we were over like 70 different apps that we were trying to support. Which is crazy, right? We had a small company, and keeping those revised when we had new features and capabilities, it was a huge thing. But we were early, and it afforded us the ability to see the market, to talk to people, and actually, it's kind of funny because as innovators, we really want to get feedback from consumers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you know what the consumer wants, and they before they know what they want, and I'll just give you this is a perfect example. We went to consumers and said, hey, run with this phone. And they said, why? Because it'll track your speed, distance, and pace. He said, I will never run with my phone. And the majority of the consumers that we interviewed said, we will never run with our phone.
Right.
I challenge you to find somebody not running with their phone today on Town Lake or anywhere you go. So in that case, we could have folded up shop and called it a day, saying, okay, consumers said they'll never run with their phone. Well, we didn't believe that. I mean, we really felt that there was going to be this time when it was going to become commonplace. Right. We were way early, so that ended up winning some really cool awards and best location based service app, and finally got picked up by Audi in 2009, and became the basis of MyCoach, which is the mobile side of things for MyCoach.
That's awesome. So now the 14-year-olds who listen now know what.
Yeah, there you go, MyCoach.
It's funny. How do you know when to? Even in that case, how do you know when to stick to your guns on a theory? Because you don't know when people will be ready. Even if you predict that they will, you don't know when.
No.
When do you close up shop versus continue to develop and move forward on something?
I mean, as you're an entrepreneur as well, there's a gut. There's this gut feeling where you make a call. You have to. If you feel strongly enough about something, and in the case of Bones of Motion, when you basically sold everything you had to make that happen and racked up debt and whatnot, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure that you've put on yourself to make sure you better make sure this is the right thing that you're doing, right? So I think intuition, gut feeling, kind of mix into that, but all in all, if you talk to any of the innovators out there that are making cool stuff, it's just they have a vision for something. They see what other people don't see, and they see convergence of technologies down the road where they go to, like a North Star. And it's hard to explain, but that's why you have to look 2 to 3 years out or even further out. But actually, like to your point, the window of looking out is shrinking.
Yeah.
I mean, so the ability to react faster is happening because consumers are becoming impatient when something hasn't been updated in a year now. It used to be 2 years you'd get a mobile phone. Then it was 18 months. Now people are getting new phones every year.
Yeah.
And
not even with just technology. Like even today, I'm a big fan of this R&B guy named Miguel. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and just this morning I was thinking I want another Miguel album. And then I looked back and I was like, oh, it just came out last year. Like it hasn't even been that long.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, where an artist usually takes, you know, 2 to 4 years in between projects, right?
Right.
But we live in this culture where people are just constantly putting out content, doing things, developing. Every time you turn around, there's a new startup, and then there's 3-4 other startups lined up behind them. And I guess along those lines, where do you go to source some of the technology? And like, how do you filter, right? Because I think you go to any networking event in the tech space, and it's like, oh, there's 30 exciting things, and there's probably another 30 ones you are completely not interested in. And which one is going to win in your favor? Based on what your needs are.
Yeah, well, a lot of times when you go to a conference like CES or any of these guys, it's too late, because by that time they've got a prototype, they've got something they're showing, and competition comes in, and you don't have the first mover advantage, you don't have the ability to pioneer or anything like that, because it becomes public, right? And so the way that we can source a lot of this, we get inspiration that way. You know, so walking the show floors and seeing what people are doing kind of stimulates other ideas, capabilities, whatnot. So I think it's invaluable for that aspect of the ideation process. But from a pure tech innovation side of things, and innovation means you're improving on something that already exists. So innovation sometimes is the right word to use, but sometimes it is it's disruption. It's changing how you use something totally and putting other things to bed because they're no longer relevant.
Right.
So we like to look for disruptive technologies too, like everybody else, and because that's going to give you that solid hit and that ability to own a space from a ideation perspective and just from a market capital perspective. So to get there, you need to have relationships with companies that are typically spending a lot of R&D in areas that are not competitive to you. So, for us to be working with an Intel or a Qualcomm or any of these chip manufacturers, they're not in the business to sell shoes and shirts and stuff that we do, wearables. I mean, Intel is from a wearables perspective, but you get the idea. I mean, they're out they're trying to figure out how to create the next whatever, and they're looking for applications. They're looking for capabilities and features.
Right.
And we come alongside as a brand and say, hey, let's brainstorm. Let's figure this out. And sometimes they have things that are hidden in the closet that they haven't told anybody, or they might have something that was specifically for medical industry or some other application.
Yeah.
And we just pivot it.
It's like going to see like those cartoonish mad inventors when you go.
No, totally.
Like, I'll put that down. Like,
yeah. It's like, say, what does this do?
Exactly. Mushroom cloud.
Oops.
There goes the air. I think it sounds like one very important skill set you have is curiosity.
Yes. Right?
Like you're curious about multiple points of the development process, but also the consumer interaction. Can you just talk about like how important that curiosity is to what you do, or just like people in your sort of sphere?
Yeah, it's like, and this is a great, it's a good question, because I think we as adults, we think we have to grow up. And we go through this process where, what does it mean to be a grown-up? Is it the way all of a sudden the way you talk, you the way you hold your liquor, or all these different things? You're thinking that you're going to be growing up from a boy to a man, and we can't be silly. It's all of a sudden you're not making jokes with your friends anymore. It's hey, this is serious. I mean, I've got a wife and kids and this, that, and the other.
Bills,
I mean, all these things, yeah.
Bills make everybody everything, stop joking.
Yeah, it just takes the, it takes some of the, life can, if you allow it, can take the joy out of life, right? It can just take the fun out of it, I should say.
But that's interesting, but that's a good quote. Life can take the joy out of life.
Can.
Right?
It can, if you allow it. And so what's important is to keep a childlike faith in miracles, and the ability to see the unseen, always questioning what you see, so it's part curiosity. It's also part allowing yourself to view solutions to problems without them being put in a box. And it's the box that gets everybody wrapped around the axle. Everybody wants to see a box and then play inside the box when they get older.
Right.
So if they still had that childlike faith, or that faith in the ability to do anything, then that's when miracles happen.
Fuck a box.
That's whatever.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get rid of the box.
Yeah.
Because that would be you innovators out there, you know, you probably know what I'm talking about. But if you are still having trouble with the box, get rid of it.
Yeah.
It's not needed. It's holding you back.
It's kind of like getting back to this idea of playing, right? Like you have to pull. A weird metaphor just came, but it's like playing with your food, right? Like, yes, you need to eat it, and it's going to sustain you, and it's important for you to have it, but, like, have fun with it in the process, and you never know what that end result is going to be. It's, you know, if you're just so buttoned up and constantly focused on that end result or these stakeholders, and I think you're in a luckier position than even most people that have jobs within an innovation practice, right? Because you don't have like very hard KPIs, right? But even with that constraint, you still have to keep that playful like mentality and curiosity about things.
I mean, I put on myself, and I didn't make it last year. I said, invent a new sport. Think about that. That's one of my targets I had last year. I didn't do it, but that's okay.
Right.
It was a goal. It was a big goal. And I'm not going to do it this year, but I'm going to have something else. But you need to put things so it's not a KPI I'm getting measured at from a brand perspective. It might affect, you know, my bonus structure and stuff like that.
Right.
But that's something, that's just me, you know. And so you really want to challenge yourself in that regard, because if you're just going, yeah, having huge problems to solve is important, because it really gets you thinking. And I was thinking about... going back to the, you know, thinking like a, you know, not thinking always like an adult, having fun with play. I mean, my daughter and I have a language of our own that we speak when we're together. I mean, we do stuff that I never did with my dad, meaning, you know, just goofy things that we do. And in the car, we'd sing real loud and roll the, you know, just, I just love to be a kid with her.
Yeah.
And, but I think the generation before me, they were more staid, more, you know, they were more conservative in their approach for child rearing. And and I think, you know, you as parents out there too, just have fun, you know, and the best way to have fun and get back to your inner child is play with your kids and see the world through their eyes. And you'd be surprised at the innovation that can come out of that.
Yeah. And it's funny to say that, because I think I hit a point, I don't know, let's call it 10 years ago, where I was like, I was mad all the time, right? I was just, because I wasn't where I wanted to be, you know, but also, like, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and so it was also, like, especially when they're infants, right? Mm-hmm. That's another point of pressure. I think kids get fun right around, like, 2 to 5, right? Like, that's when they start, especially for guys, right? You're like, oh, now I can actually roughhouse you a little bit, and then the play comes out, and you start to get in the habit of doing that. And for me, it was also doing homework, right? It was like helping with homework. And I'm like, oh, I remember this. And like, it just like, it starts to bring back this sort of nostalgic feeling. But what I challenge you, like, in terms of that advice, and just I challenge myself as well, is like, what advice do you give to somebody who doesn't have children, right? Like, how do you get back to that point of play and natural curiosity about things?
I think there's plenty of programs in every city in this country where they need mentors. Talk about a great service project. I mean, we're kind of dovetailing into that a little bit, but there are kids out there that don't have dads, that don't have moms. And if you wanted to get back into being a kid, go find one that you can adopt. I mean, not adopt into your house necessarily, but just adopt and put time into.
But don't park your car mysteriously outside of the park.
That's right. No.
That's,
kind of go through a boys or girls club or something, you know, something like that. But, you know, and if you have nephews, I mean, you know, you will find there's ways you can find to get back into that.
But just get back there. It's like, you know, it's like sometimes it's hard. It becomes hard for us to like look back and see even accomplishments or those happy moments and like hold on to those versus like, oh, this has been a shit show or like whatever the problems you've been facing. Yeah.
Go coach a team.
Go coach a team.
Real simple. Yeah. I mean, if you played a sport in high school or college, go coach that sport. You know, have fun. I mean, don't be spending all your time sitting behind a desk.
You go on trend walks.
Yes.
What are those?
So trend walks are when we'll just kind of spot an area, like for instance in New York City or in Venice Beach, we'll identify certain storefronts that we'd like to go in and kind of walk through, feel the materials that are being used in that store, understanding the layout that they've done, any kind of or. I mean, it sounds kind of funky, but it's really, each store is so unique and different. I know they're all trying to sell product and stuff, but if you strip away the salesmanship and all that stuff and just trying to get into what's happening, you can pick up trends, what colors, what anything is going on. How to display something in a way that's appealing, but more so just how do you feel, how does something make you feel? And you learn by looking and sensing and in talking about it with the people that are on the trend walk with you, saying, "Hey, what'd you think about that store? Did you like the way they used that darker wood on the floor? Did it feel like it was inviting? Did you feel like, you know, that you wanted to stay there and everything they had on the shelf you wanted to buy, or was it the point where it's like, oh, this feels too corporate, this feels too whatever?" But it's just having those kind of conversations. And during the course of the trend walk, when you're walking from store to store, you're also looking at the people on the street. You're looking down at their feet, because we're a shoe company. You're looking at what they're wearing. You're just looking at life. You're looking at...
You have to do this in safe neighborhoods, though.
Whatever.
You can't just be walking around, yeah. You know.
Are people still skating?
South Central.
No.
Looking at people's shoes.
No. Yeah, don't be doing that. So if people are still skateboarding, how are they skateboarding? Are they playing hoops on the neighborhood basketball court? I mean, you pick up so much stuff if you're just observing. I think we as a society, as we get old, especially as we have these mobile phones in our hands, we're so looking down at the phone while we're walking. We're going to run into anything, but more importantly, we're missing out on everything around us. And so trend walks are very much a low-tech analog way of getting into communities and checking out what's going on,
right,
both, you know, storefront side as well as the demographic that lives there. I mean, it's just a great
all
way to
all voice of culture, like whatever,
totally.
Like, you know,
everything.
Do you ever look at Humans of New York?
No, what is it?
Oh man, you will love this. So Humans of New York, and anybody else who's listening, like, please check it out. Humans of New York is like an Instagram/blog. This guy walks around New York, takes photos, gets a quote, and a lot of times it's like a profile of somebody in like a really quirky outfit, or a street artist, or just like just people. Like, it's not even, you know, there's no real thread other than that, like, every person has a story, and it's just like a three, or, you know, maybe a two or three sentence long statement that comes along with the photo,
mm-hmm.
and you move on to the next one. But it becomes so interesting to see, like, how different the world is, right? When, you know, or how different individuals are within the world, even in just New York.
And you're not even going very far.
Right.
One city block and you've probably hit every culture, you know.
Exactly. How did this all happen for you? Like, where, you know, this isn't, you don't go to school for this, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, how did this, when you were 18, 19, I don't know if you envisioned this as a position you play in life.
Not at all. I mean, my background's computer science, so I really enjoyed commanding the computer to do my will, building applications and whatnot in the early days. Not apps for phones, applications that would run on PCs and whatnot, and actually in mainframes at the point at my earliest days. But it wasn't until, having worked at several startups, I mean, like five or six startups, I kind of, you know, if you're in the startup phase, you kind of do, you end up doing almost every one of the disciplines within the company at some point in time. You might play marketing in one, you might do business development, you might do strategic partnerships, you might do software development, you might be the CTO, you might be the CEO, and you kind of survey all that stuff, and a product manager, and you figure out, okay, You slowly start to gather all the acumen needed,
mm-hmm.
to really start to apply towards how you can innovate. And it's kind of like and I'm not saying that everybody that innovates has to have all those disciplines or has to have been in those, you know, wearing those shoes, but it really helped me. It helped me to see, wow, okay, ideas are a dime a dozen, but a good idea executed well is what wins the day. And so how do you execute an idea well? Well, you need to understand, you know, how is it going to disrupt? How is it going to be different, the differentiator? So you get into product marketing, you get into researching, you know, your competitors, you get competitive analysis, all this kind of stuff. So in your mind, you're kind of playing all these games. When I'm looking at stuff and I see something of interest, I slowly go to a grid where, have I seen this before? Where have I seen it? What can it do? What if I made it smaller? What if I did this? What if I changed the color? And then, you know, all that, it's become almost like an athlete where when you pitch a ball to an athlete, I was looking at, the example was golf. For one of the sessions we did at South By, that I attended in South By, they showed the brain of a professional golfer playing, doing a swing of golf. And then they showed the brain of a novice player playing golf, doing the same swing, a tee. Novice player, brain activity, they had this little skull cap thing on with a bunch of electrodes and everything, showed all this activity going on in the brain
right.
when the guy was just going to swing and tee off. The professional golfer, this one little light lit up in his head, and that was it.
Wow.
Everything else was motor memory. Everything else was, it was so focused, so everything else, that he was, know, it's like, that's what you need.
Yeah.
You need something analogous to that, where you've got so many things going on that are on automatic in your head, and all you do is you cherry pick the things that kind of bubble up to the top.
That's amazing. There's a book that I love, Charles Duhigg wrote, which we tried to get him on the show. You'll come, Charles, won't you? But it's called The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. And one of the anecdotes he writes about is Michael Phelps' trainer, who basically yells to him, play the tape before any time he gets in the water. And it's just like, his body has is on autopilot. Like, it's just push play, and it's the same thing every time. And the longer version of the story kind of goes into sets up this anticipation where he dives in. His, you know, next thing he knows, his goggles are filled with water, and, you know, he's four more laps to go, and so on and so forth, and he can't see anything, and then he comes back. And he was just focused on the tape, touches the wall, looks up, world record, right? And it's kind of like, it's that exact thing you talk. Like, most of us, had we gotten the water, and the guy was like, oh, like, you go through this long list of things you're wondering about, man. But you know you've done it so many times that it should be, you know, come very
naturally. Second nature, yeah.
This is great. I was just going to ask, as far as you as a parent. Right, like, how you talked a little bit about instilling this sense of play. You know, we talked earlier about your daughter who's a photographer. So I forgot how you worded it.
She's a humanitarian.
Humanitarian, yes.
Yes,
you took the words right out of my mouth. And how did you go about instilling some of the? Because obviously, as a photographer, especially observing human culture all over the world, and as you put it, kind of giving voice to the voiceless through photography. You know, was that a deliberate thing that you tried to instill in her as a parent?
Yeah, my wife and I, we have three daughters, 26, 24, and 13. So we had a 10-year surprise. Because the two daughters...
It was some party, huh?
Yes, it was. The two younger ones were only 2 years apart, right? And they actually saw their parents go through, a really exciting time when we did the startup, right? And the ability to just be an entrepreneur and just be able to think outside the box and do all these things. They were watching everything. We didn't know that. I mean, it wasn't necessarily planned that we were saying, hey, we're going to teach, entrepreneurship 101 today, and here's what you're going to learn. But I would come home, and we'd sit around the dinner table. It was so important at that point in time to get around the dinner table and not just eat and leave, but eat and talk. And we would talk about the day. We would talk about the problems. We'd talk about any of the things, because I really valued their opinions. I wanted them to understand the conversations I was having with my wife, who also ran. I wanted a women's perspective on a lot of our stuff. So, I'm doing my own little market research with my wife at the dinner table sometimes and asking, you know, how's it going? What do you think about this idea, et cetera? And we also homeschooled our kids. So we actually spent a lot of energy allowing them to focus on their skill sets earlier on. Whereas if you're in a traditional school setting, Our daughter had her own her first business when she was 16. Had her own photography business. Now my wife was involved to help, you know, manage money and some other things. But she had her first business at 16.
Oh wow!
And she, you know, had a passion for learning at that point, and not learning, but growing in that specific field. So we kept on encouraging it, and we gave, you know, we'd buy her cameras, we would give her art, we'd give her photography classes, we would do things, send her in areas where she can go learn or see beauty that she could take pictures of. So she kind of launched herself, but we gave her the tools to do it, and we enabled it so that she wasn't trying to cram it in between homework after she got back from school at 3 to 6. You know, when we gave her the, hey, if there's it's a great day today, go out and take some photos. You know,
it's like lifestyle as an education.
Yeah, right? Totally. It's like, same thing with our second daughter.
Yeah.
So our second daughter's in San Diego, and she's, you know, she's an artist, and she paints. She's self-taught in painting. She's a do-it-yourself kind of person. She runs her own little blog on do-it-yourself projects. Other people come in and kick in and give ideas about do-it-yourself stuff. So she's got a little sustainable business, but she's got like 3 or 4 jobs actually. So she kind of walks around. You know. But she has that entrepreneur spirit. She knows she can do it. She's a virtual, you know, assistant for a couple of folks and helps do ghostwriting for a couple of blogs. So. Really crazy skill sets that both these very diverse, very different, but yet both have the desire and they are both they both have the confidence to do what they're doing.
That's awesome. So the show is called Innovation Crush. What do you see out in the world, you know, within your own field or elsewhere that you are crushing on? Like where you look and go like, oh my gosh, that's awesome! I love this trend or this thing or whatever, maybe.
Yeah, I think right now, you know, there's a lot of buzz around wearable, around fitness wearables in particular, and to break through that noise, there needs to be a disruption in that space, and we're working on some things that I think are going to be disruptive in this space, things that are going to change and motivate people to be well, not just for themselves but for the rest of the world, and so. There's going to be an impact, right? So it's thinking outside of yourself and establishing good healthy habits, but that alone is proven not to be enough. So I think there's going to be some other elements that are going to help disrupt this space, and hopefully we'll get it right. So we'll see.
The 3 burritos I ate today, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Well, it depends on how much you work out. I mean, if you burn 10,000 calories today, well, of course.
I'm sure to burn anything. No, there is a social responsibility in your own personal wellness. Like, and people don't realize that.
Oh my gosh.
There was a talk I heard where a woman said, you know, your health and your wellness isn't about you. It's about being there for the people who care about you, right? Like, you want to, you know, nobody wants a dead dad at 48, right? Like,
my daughters have told me that over and over again. Because I recently lost 20 pounds. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's and they said, hey, Dad, we want you to be around longer. And that was enough motivation. That motivated me.
Done.
It's like, oh, okay. But it did take them a while for me to finally get my butt in gear and go do something about it.
Yeah, but once you realize it's kind of like, oh, I'm just going to go have this ice cream and I'm fine. Or, you know, or just making that a choice to shift and adjust.
Right.
Like a lifestyle. But realizing that it's easy to say no to it when it's on us. Right.
But think about this. People as they get older, or not even older, people that are having issues with obesity or other problems, and they're in the hospital a lot more for diabetes and other issues, what's happening also is that's taking up bed space for people that might have just gotten into a horrific accident or some other problem. So it's taxing our ability to treat, and it's actually raising insurance costs across the board. So people know that. I think if people sat and thought about that a little bit, maybe that would change, you know, behaviors. But that's real. Those are real.
Yeah.
You know, real. I'm not making these numbers. I didn't tell you any numbers, but it's real trends. Insurance prices are going up because people aren't taking care of themselves. So hopefully, there's going to be something that comes out that people are going to think more about the impact that they're having in the world and the way that they take care of their body.
Yeah. All you can eat doesn't necessarily have to be exactly that. Last but not least, complete this phrase for me.
Yeah.
Innovation to me is
Well, I told you what the definition of innovation was, but innovation to me is taking something and making it better.
That's great. How can people find you? Where are you? What's your
Twitter? JONW. Yeah. Let me give you all that data. Sure. Yeah. Come knocking on my door.
GPS tracker you got on your phone. Let's just lock in the bones in motion.
Yeah. I do have a Wi-Fi enabled doorbell that has an HD camera built in. So if you do come ring the door, I'm going to be able to tell you from wherever I am in the world that you're not going to try to get in.
Trap door. That's where trap door is coming. Next innovation.
JON.Werner, at adidas.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been great.
It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity to do this.
So, everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and I will talk to you next time. Thanks. Bye.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny and I love you.